When I have all this material, maybe now I should try to push it to magazines. And so I did, you know, and it was successful. Then I applied to Vogue Talents and they accepted me and they liked my work so much that they wanted to write an article about me. And like little by little, step by step, I started to understand what is a fashion world, how it works, what are the rules of the game, you know, and how to actually get to the top of the top, to celebrities, to, I don't know, whatever your imagination can provide, you know.
So, hello everyone, and today I'm with Iva Ksenevich.
Hello.
So, please, could you introduce yourself in two sentences?
Yes, sure. My name is Iva Ksenevich. I'm originally from Belarus. Since 2 years, I live in Paris and developing my two brands, Iva Ksenevich for haute couture and Marais Beret for the beret.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And first of all, thank you so much for accepting my invitation. And the first question I would like to ask you is, what is your definition of modesty in fashion?
Modesty in fashion. First of all, when I think of a modest person, for me, it's somebody who is not showing off and somebody who is kind of keeping his talents to himself, not trying to show more than he or she really is. And I think this should be a hard-working person, for sure. And because, you know, to show off takes a lot of energy, actually. So people who do that, most often, it's just like, you know, there is nothing under it. So, and modest people, they just don't talk too much. They do a lot. So they really make things happen. And it's a lot of effort, and I think this modesty helps them to really concentrate on what they're doing and create this special, nice circle of people around them, like true people, which also helps a lot, you know, because they don't attract the unnecessary connections. And I think the quality of their product normally is really high, because for them it's important to make the best result, you know, because they really put a lot of effort. So yeah, I think modesty is in a way minimalism, you know, and minimalism and quality. I would say that.
So modest fashion will be minimalism and high quality.
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah, I do have some things which are not really minimalistic at all, you know, but like, so maybe sometimes I'm not too modest, but I think that the true quality is all also like about details, and not necessarily you have a lot of like bling materials or something, but you really develop the techniques, you develop the how would I say it? You develop the balance of colors and things, you know. You're being kind of modest in your design, but very true to your character, you know, in a way.
And you pay attention to details.
Of course, it's really important, because even when you're modest, I think you take time to develop things. You're not like rushing it with a, oh, now I will create a masterpiece in 5 seconds, you know. But I mean, like, you really develop your skills with hours and hours and hours of work. And even if something doesn't happen now, even if you don't succeed now, you just make more effort to find this perfection, you know, and to reach this level of professionalism, and without spending your time on showing off and trying to be who you are not, you know. That's pretty much it, I think.
So you act a lot and you talk less.
Yeah.
But I think that's a pretty good definition, and it could apply to anyone, because it's more focused on inner values, how you think inside, And yes, well, thank
exactly.
you. And now if we talk about like your educational background,
mm-hmm.
What did you study and how did you came to study fashion?
The thing is, I never kind of studied fashion. I lived my fashion, you know. I lived it with my experience 7 years in the field. And when I started, I really didn't know how, what. And I think a lot of young fashion designers, they have the same questions, the same problems, because what they see is the top of the iceberg. They see ready-made successful designers, but they don't really realize what it takes to be there, to make this way and how to start it properly. So you cannot be like you cannot make mistakes. You cannot not to make mistakes. You will, you know, everybody does. But maybe you will make fewer mistakes and you will just go further. And
so wait, you didn't study fashion at all?
No.
So what did you study?
My background in Minsk is linguistics, languages basically, and literature. So I have a bachelor in that, and then I moved to, I lived in Moscow for 10 years, and in Moscow I started developing the brand Iva Ksenievich Haute Couture out of curiosity. Sorry.
And how did you have the curiosity to study?
Because I went to London, and in London, again, out of curiosity, I tried to study hat making, because by that time I was 10 years a hairdresser and a hairstylist. So it was interesting for me to develop this kind of skill to something more creative that will stay more than 1 month, you know. And I went to these special courses with a royal milliner, Rose Corey, in London. And I just tried and I loved it. I loved working with my hands, creating something. And I understood that I have so many ideas, so many designs in my head that... It's just, it was really fascinating, so I decided to continue this when I came back to Moscow. And then I went to Paris to study more millinery, but it was more like in atelier private studies. It was not a university or anything, you know, and this was like a couple of weeks studies. So I took the base from Paris and from London, and then I came back to Moscow, and I was developing myself. I'm more or less like, yeah, self-taught, I might admit. But the more I was making it, the more I had friends, and I started to have a lot of connections in fashion industry. We started making shootings. Somebody told me about like lookbook. I was like, what is a lookbook? Like, a lookbook is something that you, somewhere where you put your collection. I was like, okay, so how do I make a collection? And then I was lucky enough to get into an atelier in Moscow where I worked with two fashion designers who did have the background in fashion in universities. And from them, I learned a lot, you know. They told me how, you know. So basically, no, I don't have a paper, but I always had these people who surrounded me, plus my own experience, that I understood how to make this way. And I did make it, and I made it successful going to big magazines like Vogue, Officiel, Harper's Bazaar.
And wait, how did you come up to be featured on like big magazines like Vogue, Officiel?
Because I was not afraid to experiment with the styles, and I chose a very niche profession, which is hat making, you know. And at times, and even now, it's like it's not a huge field, you know. So designers, they're more or less afraid to go there. They prefer to make clothes or other accessories that sell better. But because it was so special, there was more interest from stylists. You know, they always need something cool for the fashion tutorials. Then I found some platforms where online where I could post my work and find some creative teams of photographers, designers, stylists with whom we started organizing the shootings. And then I was like, okay, maybe now when I have all this material, maybe now I should try to push to magazines. And so I did, you know, and it was successful. Then I applied to Vogue Talents, and they accepted me, and they liked my work so much that they wanted to write an article about me as a designer. And like little by little, step by step, I started to understand what is a fashion world, how it works, how what are the rules of the game, you know, and how to actually get to the top of the top to celebrities, to I don't know, whatever your imagination can provide, you know. And that's pretty much it. So I found myself with a lot of experience with that, and a lot of designers, they started asking for like advice, writing me. And
now you were still in Moscow?
Sorry?
When you started to develop the brand,
it was in Moscow.
In magazine, you were still in Moscow.
Yeah, it was in Moscow in 2013.
Okay.
7 years ago. And almost eight. Oh my god. So yeah, time flies. It was in Moscow, yeah. And basically in Moscow I reached everything possible. Like, we did big shows. I was exposing my pieces in the Moscow Fashion Museum, and we did a lot of shootings with celebrities and stuff. But then I understood that I want to move forward, and that's why I moved to Paris in 2018 and to develop my brands here.
And in Paris, what happened? It was still good? People like your work?
Yeah, I in Paris, I decided to study. I went to do masters in luxury and art. And deliberately, I didn't choose fashion because I already knew about fashion, everything that I had to know, you know. So I wanted to understand more how the luxury market works for my haute couture pieces. Art was always interesting for me, so I did this education in a university and got the diploma of master's. And actually then some interesting things started to happen, because my haute couture is very kind of artistic work. I create only one-of-a-kind pieces, spending hours and hours of work with my stagiaires, who started to come to my atelier from French fashion universities and to learn my techniques.
So every of your designs is handcrafted?
Yes, everything, each of them. And it's like one of a kind. And this year we even started using silver, like precious materials, with one of my stagiaires, who is a jewelry maker. So we developed some designs as jewels, you know, and it's really interesting. And then the art world started to be interested in my designs too. And it's amazing because they look at it as art, you know. And I like this concept, because fashion is great too, but I also want to represent it as an art piece, because this is how it's done, you know.
And just quickly, if we come back to your master in luxury art, what did you learn? What did it taught you?
About art, we went to all maybe museums in Paris. They gave us cards, to passes for 1 year, so we could go to museums unlimited times. So I went to Louvre like every 2 days. At the same time, I was writing a diploma in history of hats, my diploma work, and I spent like 3 months in a library in Rue Richelieu, like a huge BNF library, where I was studying. I studied all books that are there about fashion, like everything, every book about fashion in this library, in this Swiss library, I studied. Like, I went there really every day during the whole summer. And I wrote the diploma work about hats, so now I know all the stories, the amazing facts about everything that you can put on your head, you know. It was exciting. And then about luxury, they took us to all luxury stores. We understood how it works, how big brands like Chanel, like Hermes, like Louis Vuitton, how they make their business, how they develop their concept, how they market themselves, you know, like everything about luxury. And at the same time, of course, history of luxury, the kings, the queens, the chateau, we went everywhere. It was a tremendous impact and inspiration. And thank you, ESA, my university, because they turned out to be very supportive and so rich in this information. And it felt like finally all pieces of the puzzle in my head, they came to one picture, you know. And it really helped me to move on and not to be scared that, oh my god, I'm entering this luxury world, you know, how, what. But now I feel confident, you know. I know what I want, I know where I go, I know how to reach it. And every months bring some new kind of results, you know. And I feel like now it's kind of like limitless, you know. You can do this, do that, and it's just getting easier, you know, in a way, with the diploma, with the understanding of what are you answering.
And you know, if we talk more about your style, the hats you are creating now, are they different from the hats you were creating when you were in Moscow? How did your style evolve?
In a way, they're different because we were talking about modesty. I think they're a bit more modest now. Because in Russia, they like all this bling bling and feathers and sparkles and stuff. Volumes, and that's one of the reasons why I decided to leave Russia and go out, because it's not really my style, all these kitschy things, you know. And France, in Paris, I was learning some modesty when less is more, actually, and which allowed me to start creating designs that I really like. More sublime, you know, more simple, but more striking in a way, because French people didn't like to show off. They, if they put something on their head, it should be something more like minimalistic, I would say. Yeah? Yeah. Less sparkles, less feathers. Like, all in my collections here, I almost don't use feathers at all. You know, in Moscow, it was always feathers. Like, how can you get away from feathers? Oh my god, you know. So yeah, and I started having students from fashion universities in Paris.
And how did they find you?
And they find me through LinkedIn and Instagram,
okay.
And they just write to me that they love my work and they would like to be my interns.
So you didn't look for them?
No, I don't look for interns, and now I have more and more and more coming. Like. I did have before in Moscow, even there was a guy who came to study with me for internship for 2 months from Mississippi, from America.
Mississippi.
Yeah, to my studio in Moscow. And now I have like every month somebody wants to you know, to make this internship. So now I always have somebody come in, and which is great because it's new energy. And this even the new collection I developed with Hugo and Jean, they are from French universities like Chadron, Atelier Chadron Savard, and the second one, sorry, I don't remember, he's from Lyon. And even the teachers, they came to check what we're doing, you know. So it's like new, and they have this French thinking, I have this kind of like more Slavic thinking, I guess, you know. And it was a great mixture of this, you know, energies and ideas. And we came up to a great collection, which will be exposed in an art gallery here in Paris soon. So I think I will continue with that. And I love also the idea of mixing the comprehension of beauty of different cultures. Like, then I had these two guys from France, then I had a girl from Switzerland, and now I'm having a girl from China, sorry, from Hong Kong. Yeah, so it's amazing, all this kind of, you know, interesting...
diversity.
Yeah. And I want to teach more. I really love teaching. I think it's my thing. Maybe at some point I will end up also teaching at one of the fashion universities in Paris, because I feel like it gives me the energy boost, and really I love sharing my experience and techniques.
So you are also teaching how to make hats?
Yes, exactly. And soon I will make an online, not soon, but I made an online course for teaching my basic techniques in millinery, which can be found on big educational platforms on the internet. And already one university in Moscow got interested, they requested to buy it for their university, for their students, because I'm in Paris, I'm not in Moscow, but they want to transmit that to their students, and then I come and meet them in person, which is great. I think it's amazing.
So we will put the link in bio for everyone who would like to...
Welcome!
And also, you are a really true businesswoman, because I think that you also launched another brand.
Yeah, I also launched another brand. It's called Marais Beret. It's a brand for French beret, because I really love Paris and France. And because if we are talking about a hat, a French hat, so what can be more French than a beret, right? So I want to develop more fashion for this accessory, and I want to bring beret in a new style, like in a cool style. Marais, because it's a fashion hub of Paris, and known by the mixture of its street styles, okay, LGBT community, but the thing is, it's a bit unisex, and the people dare to dress up there in the streets. So every time you go out, you're like in a fashion runway, you know, and I love how they mixed all the materials, the styles, the colors. So I want to take these characteristics of Marais and Beret, because it's the Beret, and it will be a new, it is actually already, it's a new cool brand for Beret. It's more like a community, so when you just buy this and wear it, you wear Paris, you wear the cool vibe, and yeah, it's a young brand, only half a year old, but there is a lot of interest from young people, from elderly people. Actually, Beret can be for anybody, you know. So, and we, I created my new collection, my first collection actually for summer, of Beret from Silk Organza, which is like transparent Beret, very lightweight. So I was thinking, if people are wearing Beret in the winter, like wool Beret, why not in the summer? Why not to make them from transparent materials? And it looks really great. So I did a big exposition in Tuileries, which was called Première Classe, in this year in March. And was big success, especially for Japanese buyers, for Korean buyers. French people were interested, Italian people were interested. There were a girl from, a buyer from South Africa who was like, oh my God, finally somebody was like, had this idea of making summer Beret, because we have always this hot weather, and I really love Beret, I want to wear them all the time. And I couldn't, because they were only from wool, and now I can. Wow, that's so cool. So yeah, I think business ideas are important, and I definitely love haute couture, but at the same time, prêt-à-porter, like Beret, it's also a different new twist, you know, in a way. And that's why I think you should be quite flexible in what you do, and try the ground, you know, see what your clients like, and like, if an idea comes to you, just realize it. And that's why also I decided to make one more thing, educational thing. I decided to launch also my classes, online classes for young designers, to help them to understand their way, you know, and like
business,
how to adapt it to the market, and consider what they want to do, and then how to do it, you know. Because even one of my stagiaires, Hugo, we were having a lot of talks, and he said, like, oh, I was like, Hugo, so you're 21, you're soon graduating, so then what you gonna do? He's like, I want to create a fashion brand, of course. I was like, okay, so what kind of fashion brand? He's like, I want to make accessories. Like, okay, so he's a jeweler, but he also wants to make headwear, that's why he came to study with me. I was like, okay, but what kind of headwear? It's like, luxury, I want luxury, one-of-a-kind pieces, big pieces. I was like, Hugo, okay, but how are you gonna sell it, you know, like, how are you gonna adapt it to the market? Like, because, you know, young people, they always have these big desires, ambitions, which is great, you know, but they don't think how to adapt it. Like, this is probably the modesty thing for me, where less is more, you know. And this modesty here is super important, because if you don't have it, you will just end up creating it all, and nobody will buy it, and you will just sit there and thinking, like, what did I do wrong, you know, like, but if you have this modesty in creating, like, okay, I'd better create a smaller piece, more simple, but more wearable, more adapted, as like, Hugo, start with the simpler collections, and then when your name is big, you will create a luxury brand. Because look at all luxury brands, their names, they're big, they already sell, but it took them like 100 years to actually create this name, which sells. You're not Chanel, you're not like yet, maybe not one yet. Day, you know, just think about it. So I really want to guide these young people, so they would probably just take less time, you know, to be there.
And they won't make the mistakes that maybe you did. Or
exactly. That now I see very clearly from the side, you know. So, yeah.
Because it's a long process, but you have to go step by step. And what you want to teach them is how to take the right step and not to rush things, but take your time to focus on
quality. Yeah, and exactly, and quality, and also the brand image. Like, mm-hmm. if you want to sell, what you want to sell, how to create a lookbook, how to, even the colors are important of the brand. Yes. Even the logo is super important for the brand. Even the name is super important. How to protect your name, how to protect your design, how to protect your product, how to, you know, produce if you're not making it, how to find the production, how to ship, how to find the clients, how to get to big magazines, how to even put your thing on a celebrity, you know, because lot of people don't know how to
and
do that.
And you put your
design on course.
Which one?
Yeah. Monica Bellucci, then Rihanna, then Daphne Guinness, then who else? There are quite a few, you know, like every Natalia Vodianova, you know, she has my piece.
Perfect.
Yeah, yeah, the wife of Bernard Arnault, the owner of
Image. They all wore Iva Ksenevich.
Yeah, and some of them, they have it in their collection. Yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
In private collection. And the thing is, like, it's not impossible. You know, every, I don't know, a couple of weeks or something, I have a request for stylist, from stylist who wants to, like, put it on celebrity. But then it's also about your conditions. And you have to think about your conditions. You don't have to be like, yes, 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 take everything, just, you know, put it. No, you have to have your dignity. You have to have your contract. You have to have your conditions, because you are creating. Mm-hmm. And this is a very big error that I think a lot of young designers, they're afraid to say their word. They're afraid to say, like, what I want.
Mm-hmm.
They only listen to what people direct them to do, because they want to be there, and they're scared to say no. You know, like, this I want, this I don't want. As soon as they hear the big name,
mm-hmm.
straight away they're like, yes, 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 just take it. But actually, it's, there's something that has to change there, and it, for me, it's a big thing, because I also, it took me time to come to this, you know, to actually understand how it works and how to negotiate with them. And at the moment, like, I don't have a problem telling them, okay, this is my contract, these are my conditions, no.
And so now, I guess, you have a lot of magazines that want to use your
brands, yeah.
for editorials.
Yeah.
And did it happen for you to say no to a magazine because they didn't want to accept your conditions?
Yeah. Quite a lot lately. Because after quarantine, when I was in quarantine, I had quite some time to think about things, you know, and I decided to kind of redesign my brand in a way. I decided to give less, but to more quality, you know. Mm-hmm. It has always been quite quality, but now I rent my pieces.
You're more selective.
Yeah, more selective. I started renting them. I started asking for money for the rent. And when magazines, they are not okay with this, I say, okay, you're not okay, but this was my work.
Mm-hmm.
I worked a lot over it. So if you want to use that, it's one of a kind piece. It's
mm-hmm.
an art piece. It's not like something you find in a shop, you know. So this is my conditions. And some of them, stars, they're like, they never, they were like, no, but we don't work like this. You have to give it because this is the celebrity, because we have 2 million subscribers, because then I was like, I don't care, you know. I had recently a letter from Numero magazine, and they asked me for the pieces. I was like, okay, here are my conditions, you pay this, and they're like, of course, no problem with that at all. And I started asking also for security deposits, you know, from everybody. I started, like, kind of trusting less. Not that I don't trust people, but I want to be less stressed that if I give my piece, which is one of a kind, to a stylist, and he disappears with it for, like, I don't know, 2 days, and how it will be back. I had so many stories when it was broken, when it was missing, when the stylus would just disappear, and I was trying to, you know, I had it all. So I know how to prevent young designers from what I went through.
Mm-hmm.
So now my conditions are very strict, and I don't care. I really don't care. I have my thing. If they don't accept it, take it or leave it. That's it. And you have to develop this. You have to develop this, because this is when people start to respect you, and this is when they start paying you for your job, actually.
So know your worth and add taxes to it.
Exactly. And stay modest.
I love it. And, you know, a question I wanted to ask you regarding your Iva Ksenevich brand. What is the favorite piece you created? And why?
My favorite piece that I created, I would say there are a couple, but one of the top is called La Liberté. It's a piece that is already sold to a private gallery, so unfortunately I don't have it, but I will explain why, because this piece is a bird. If you go to my website, you will see it on the main page. It's a bird on a cage, and at the times I was really putting a lot of effort into immigrating from Russia, because I saw no more way to develop there, and it was a big fight for me for 5 years, you know, just to make my way as a designer from, let's be clear, poor country, you know, with dictatorship. And I just knew that I had to leave, I had to breathe freely, that I have to develop, but I couldn't do it there. And because of the papers, and because I was not from Europe, because, you know, I had to prove the whole world that I actually worth something, that I actually can do my life, live where I want, not where I have to, you know. And it was a big, big fight for me, like over years, and I managed to make it. And when I managed to make it, I decided to create this piece of a cage. It's like a cage, a mask of a cage on the face. And on this cage, I put like a bird with real feathers from a real bird. And there is like a golden tear going down this cage. And for me, this piece, I called it La Liberté, which means freedom, symbolizing this bird, which is already on the cage, ready to fly off, you know. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's like, I don't know, every time I just talk about it, I'm like, you know, for me, it was a big, big, big step. And probably not everybody understand how it was, you know, how hard it was to actually get there. And the piece was sold to a girl who wrote me one day, as soon as I made this collection and I put this piece to the, like, to the show to people, there was a girl who wrote to me, and she said, you know what, I want to buy it. I just fell in love with this piece. And I was like, I don't think I want to sell it. You know, it's like, for me, it's a personal, mm-hmm. you know, thing. Mm-hmm. And she was like, yeah, I understand everything. And she was like, I'm not sure that I can even pay you the money it's really worth. Mm-hmm. But I have this much. And the thing is, like, if you sell me this piece, I will tell the story to my children and to my grandchildren. I will keep it as a family relic. And I will take care of it, and I will make sure that all the generation in my family, they know about you, about your work. And because for me, it also, like, when I saw it, I just understood that it's like, you know, love from first sight. Mm-hmm. And this girl, she really touched my heart in a way, because this is actually how I want people to treat what I do, you know, because you put a lot of effort, you create, you mm-hmm. you dare, actually, you know, and it's part of you. It's like a baby. It's like you give away your baby. And I agreed, you know, and I thought, like, if this piece is called Freedom and this bird is on the cage ready to fly off, maybe I should let it go.
Oh, it's beautiful.
So I let it
but
go.
But you know that it's in good hands.
Yeah, I know it's in good hands. That's the thing. And this girl, she's still like, we keep in touch, you know. She follows my career. I follow her a little bit. And she wrote me not so long ago. She said, like, you don't imagine, like, how much emotions this piece brought me and still bringing. And I have the most beautiful stories connected to it now. And I really keep it as, you know. And voilà.
Oh, this is so beautiful.
Yeah.
And so now if we come to the next questions about your inspirations and your favorite designers, who would be the three designers or brands that inspire your vision of modesty?
Okay, so if we talk about designers, if we talk about art, I can tell you about, if we talk about art, I can...
Oh, wait, first of all, about designers.
Oh, designers.
Designers or brands, if you
brands.
Have one.
Let me think about it.
Oh. You know, when you see, oh, it inspires my vision of modesty, it's like...
You know, basically, I just like quality. I just like quality things. I cannot tell you like the brand names. I was never big at that. Like I'm really much inspired by Alexander McQueen, John Galliano, but they're not modest, you know? They're more like, they were fearless. They were like doing this little revolution, you know? And I feel similar spirits, you know? Even Labutano went to his exposition recently. He's not modest, but he's super creative, and he had this courage to experiment at some point. And this is what I really admire. For like the modesty, I don't know, I really cannot tell, you know. I know that for me, there are a lot of young brands now which are really trying to provide this quality for clothes, and I think this is the great wave, you know, for the moment. Maybe for the moment we don't really need this like theatrical big things. Maybe now in the times of coronavirus and things, people will appreciate more this kind of like simple and simple and quality stuff. And the only thing that I would wish for is that when they pay their money for something, they pay for this good
quality.
Good thing, you know. So.
And if we talk about artists then.
If we talk about artists, yeah, I can tell you a couple of artists because I was making a project about it actually. And one of the artists, his name is Stephen Melton. He creates metal works, and he's really thinking about nature, how people they're mistreating nature, that animals are dying, and that's why he started creating some structures, metal structures connected to it, to show the beauty of nature and how people mistreat it. And he also even created the capsule of time, which is like a metal capsule in which he put more than 300 glass balls. In each ball there is like an animal or an insect, and he wants to bury this capsule somewhere, so when he believes all animals will die, our children or grandchildren, grandchildren, they will find it and they will take the DNA to restore the animals. And nobody knows about this guy. He lives like 2 hours ride from London, and I happened to be in his studio with my project, and he's so cool, you know. He's so genuine and nice and so modest, you know. And in Instagram he has like 300 followers or something, but the things he does for people, for the earth, they're really enormous, you know.
But you know, followers doesn't mean anything. Sometimes you have a lot of followers but you are not doing something good, and you are, sometimes you can do a very quality without having any followers.
Yeah, that's the thing. And then there's another one, his name is Alex Drozdin. He's from Russia. I also took an interview from him for my project before. And he makes glass vases, you know. And to make these glass vases, he goes 900 kilometers from Moscow in like minus 20 in his car to a plant where he sleeps on the floor for 2 weeks just to create this... I don't know. I don't remember. I don't think it's even the city, actually. I think it's more like maybe a plant in the middle of nowhere. And just because in Europe, to rent a glass studio, it costs 1,000 euros per hour, you know? And there he at least has some discount or something, as he explained, because some friends of him, they're renting it. And this guy, he's so devoted to what he does, and he wants to show the beauty of glass, so he uses this kind of Russian glass. And he's only 21, you know? So he's so young, and he at the same time teaches judo, you know? So he's like combining these jobs. But I met him like 2 or 3 years ago, and I see how he's driving, he's developing, he's grazing. He started taking part in Milan in some expositions. I see that he was really passionate about it, that he really wants to, you know, like I see he's stubborn, I see, and he's super modest too, you know, like it's great to have this sort of people that they do their thing, and they just they don't show off, they are who they are, but they provide this story, this great story, you know. So, yeah.
And they have a big passion.
Yeah, they have big passion for what they do, and they just, it's like it's their thing, you know. And I think also for young designers it's important to choose something which gives you this passion, which gives you this love. If it's I don't know, jewelry, let it be jewelry. If it's like working with fabrics, work with fabrics. So if it's leather works, leather works. So choose something that really gives you pleasure and that you at least want to understand, you know, you want to learn, you want to go deeper, you want to, it's like Alexander McQueen said in his interview, like, give me everything, 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 give me, like, I want to study, just teach me everything. You have to be so, like, excited about it, yeah.
And it's good that you are talking about Alexander McQueen, because what would be your favorite fashion exhibition?
My favorite exhibition was in London. It was the collaboration of Alexander McQueen and Philip Tracy, of course, and it was amazing. It was devoted to Isabelle Blow, who found both of these talents at some point, and she helped them to show it to the world. And it was amazing in a way that both of them, they had this the same level of creativity, you know. You couldn't say that somebody's better, somebody's worse, you know. They just did it in their own way, and the mix of it was just great. I spent like 4 or 5 hours, I don't remember, in this exposition, rewatching the videos they were showing, looking at these pieces from all kind of like dimensions. It was great. It was amazing. And if you can apply modesty to that, okay, it's not, it doesn't look very modest, you know. They like to create this a bit weird, a bit futuristic, a bit like, you know, forms, but every inch of it matters, like every detail matters. And it's like they played with minimalism and exaggerating the forms, you know, together. And I think this created this perfect cocktail, you know, of these two things together. And if you look at them as people, you know, they are very simple.
Yes.
You know, they wear simple clothes. Like I met Philip Tracy in Moscow. He was in a sportswear, you know. He came to give a lecture to, I don't know, 5,000 people who came to listen to him, and he was like in sportswear, you know, very simple. Like he lives his simple life, but
great.
No,
so they are
not at all. Yeah, not at all. Same as Alexander McQueen was. Like he was wearing just his jeans, just a t-shirt. He was not really like, you know, look at me, I'm a designer. You know, all their artistic energy went into creating these amazing pieces. And even if sometimes they're a bit theatrical, a bit, you know, overwhelming, you look at it and you understand that there every detail matters. You know, there is nothing extra. And sometimes when I look at works of students, for example, I was invited as a judge for the alumnus of LISA University here, Fashion University here in Paris, to judge their work after 1, 2, 3 years of studies. And some of them, you can see that they are trying so much to be special that they overdo a lot. And then it looks like, you know, trash just attached to the body, or too sexy, or too much, you know. Like, make it look simpler, make
and
it look nicer
also.
And authentic, mm-hmm. and the quality. But when they're trying to impress, they forget about the quality, you know what I mean? So, but Alexander McQueen and Philip Tracy, they were big enough and experienced enough to create an impression and the quality, you know. But it's a tremendous amount of work, hours of work, studying, trying, experimenting, failing, getting up and doing it again. It's just, it's important to understand that, because without this process nothing's gonna happen, you know.
So the most important thing will be to be authentic to our true self.
Yeah, you have to understand what you like and what probably you liked as a child. Try to, like, when I was a child, I always tried to make something with my hands. I didn't really like to draw much, but I was always creating something with my hands, like little rooms, little things. And once I asked my dad to buy me like a hammer and some nails and some wooden blocks, because I wanted to make a house, you know, myself, like a little one for a doll or something. And he went to the shop, because in the shop I saw this kits, you know, where you find all these materials, like for boys, you know. And my dad, he went to the shop and he came back with a doll, and he was like, here you go, all the kits for boys are finished, there are no nails, because he was so afraid that I will become like a boy, you know. And I look at this doll, I was like, what do I do with it? I don't want a doll. I want like my nails and my hammer and my wood. I want to make a house like myself. Like I don't want to have this stupid doll, you know? I was so disappointed, I remember. Like I really wanted to just create. And maybe parents in Soviet time, they just saw it as like unusual, you know, hobby for a girl, but it was just my passion to create objects and 3D objects, not just paint, but something that I can, you know, construction basically. It's my passion. Yeah.
And it's good because you started by like being a hairdresser, so yeah, working on hair, and then after working on hats. So
yeah, hair is also a structure actually,
yes,
you know, and then it's very close, so now I understand how to put a hat on the head and to make it look good, to attach it to the hair, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
So that's very good. And if we talk about your inspiration, how do you keep yourself inspired?
Inspired? I go to museums a lot. Museums, art galleries, and especially museums. It gives me a lot of inspiration, and it actually feeds your eyes. You see all these pieces of art, be attentive to the details. Sometimes I sketch there. I think also I love, because we live in Paris, you just can have a walk in the street and you can be already inspired by many things.
And what are your favorite museums in Paris?
I like Louvre, of course, but then I like Musée des Arts Décoratifs, and I also like Musée de la Chasse et la Nature. It's in Marais, it's a smaller museum, but they really mix nature and art, contemporary art, in a very interesting way.
Okay, so that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think it will be the last... No, not yet. I think you have something for November.
Yes, for November. Yeah, thank you for reminding me. Also what you do should also come from yourself too. So at some point I understand that I love Paris, I love being here, I love my atelier, I love people coming in and out almost every day. But the thing is, sometimes you just want to change the picture and you just want to, it's important to switch to some other image sometimes, you know. And I was thinking maybe I should go to an island for, I don't know, a couple of weeks, a month, just to stay there and in my solitude and just recharge, reconnect to nature, do some cool stuff, you know. And I was like, maybe I should find some villa with cool people and just exchange. And imagine we have a glass of wine, we cook together, we do a fashion masterclass or just, you know, something interesting. And I couldn't find it. I was searching everywhere. I couldn't find it, like in Corsica, and actually being on an island, it gives some kind of romantic mood, you know. So I decided to create it myself. I decided to create a project, a retreat for people where they can come to Corsica to a villa that I found, and they can stay either a weekend or a week, you know, this villa, doing master classes with me, yoga and fitness in the morning, we cook together. There are some other people who come in and out, everybody's nice, everybody's smiling, we during the day we create, we make fashion shooting, we create, we make sketches, we create maybe even some headwear or maybe jewelry or something interesting together, you know. And then in the evening we cook, we have fun, we go to the beach. The beach is actually, don't even have to go there, it's like it's in front of this villa. It's like 100 meters away. I don't know for how people perceive the sea, but for me it's a great relaxator. Like when I even look at the waves, even if I'm near this sound of waves, it really calms me down, you know. You take a book, you just sit there, you just look at it, and I just want to create a place where everybody's happy and they come to this retreat and they go back to their normal daily life refreshed, renewed, charged with this artistic energy, you know. And I think Corsica is a perfect place for this because it's the birthplace of Napoleon as well. So it's also part of history. There are many things to see around. And so I want this year in November try to launch this project. So everybody is welcome to contact me for the details of this retreat in November, and hopefully it will be a great experience for everybody, and we will just be so inspired, you know, to for new stuff together.
So we will put the link in bio, and for people who will listen to the podcast after, maybe there will be some new fashion retreats. We don't know, so just follow the link. And yes, and so the last question will be, what advice would you give for fashion entrepreneurs who want to have a successful career?
Advice is to be brave, never give up, and just follow your dream, because it's only you who makes it happen. You know, you believe in it. You have to be strong. You have to just go, no matter what. And if you want some advices, if you want some guidance on the way, I'm always there. You can subscribe to my online teaching. You can find the links. You will understand more. Or if you want to do your own way, it's also great. Just don't forget that every mistake makes you stronger, gives you more experience, and that finally you will make it. You just have to really believe in that, and try to listen to other people for their advices, and try to analyze other people's stories, you know. Try to be open and curious. Curiosity is very important.
About advice, sometimes I don't know if it's always good to listen to others' advice.
When you're lost, it's good, you know, when you don't know where to start, what
because
to do.
Because sometimes people won't necessarily give you good advice.
Well, it depends who you ask, you know. If you ask your mom, you know, and she judges from her perspective as a mom, and you're asking about professional sphere, maybe it's a bad, you know, idea. But if you ask a professional about professional sphere, maybe it's not a bad idea, because at least these people, they had some experience, and in the end of the day, it's you who decides whether you do it or not. But the thing is, if you don't ask, if you're not curious, you will just, it's like you will not see different ways, you know. You will have just your way in the head, and it's not necessarily the best one.
So the most important will be to ask advice from professional people.
Of course, professional people, and try to be open and try to analyze more, you know. So even me, I still, every month, I still subscribe to a new podcast or a new webinar, seminar, about topics that I want to develop. Like if I'm developing business now, I'm always like subscribing to some business channel, to a business people who already build multi-million businesses, and to understand their story. I read books about successful people to understand their story, you know. Not necessarily it's my story, but in every book that I read, I find something useful for myself.
Even if it's not related to fashion?
Not necessarily, no.
And do you have some books you could advise us to read if you want to read a book?
Yeah, I would really advise you to read the book. What's the name of it? It was written, I think the name is Nasty Gal. It's the name of a big American company that was created by the girl who made it by herself with no investment, no nothing, zero money, alone in a small apartment. And it's amazing how she built this structure, how she built this business model. Yeah, and she was a pioneer in this stuff. And I really admire people like that, like her, like Steve Jobs. I read his book too, you know, like people who made it happen, you know, and you shouldn't be afraid of it. You shouldn't think like, oh, she managed because she's special and I'm not. No. That's why I will not manage. Everybody can. You can be whoever you want. Like everybody can. Just in your mind, you have to always put a little bit higher, a little bit higher, a little bit higher, and just aim to this a little bit higher. Just be sure that it's a little bit step up, a little step up, a little step up. Not to look at people who are already there and just see, think like, oh, I will never get there. No, you will get there. It just takes time, it takes effort, and it takes actually learning a lot, you know. And you can learn it from books, from people, from everybody finds his own way, you know. And coaching is great too, you know, because you can share ideas, you can ask for advices, then maybe you have your own thing, but this sharing is really important because you see it from the different angle, you know what I mean?
Well, thank you so much for those inspiring words. And the last question, the very, very last now, is if you, people want to contact you to learn more about your brand, where can they find you?
They can find me on Instagram. You can just type in Eva Ksenievich, eva.ksenievich. But even if you type eva.ks, you will already find me. You can Google my name as well, Eva Ksenievich. You will find all the information, different links, my website. It's very easy because there is no other Eva Ksenievich. I don't have any, like, I have a twin, but I don't have any kind of like copies. And then for my projects, for the project in for the villa, which will be called Villa Villa, you can find link and information within this podcast. Then for my education session, either for millinery techniques or for coaching for young designers how to create your brand from zero, you can also find all the links within this podcast.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Eva.
Yeah, welcome.
Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.